is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
We've got this awesome thing where we call it JYDP Nation. So the youth program is JYDP, Jaguar Youth Development Program. And we block off the first three rows behind the varsity bench, and that's JYDP Nation, and only little kids can sit there.
Ryan Hintz is entering his fifth season as the boys' varsity basketball coach at Blue Valley West High School in Overland Park, Kansas. Hintz grew up in Kansas City, attending Shawnee Mission East High School in Prairie Village, Kansas. He played 4 years of college basketball at William Jewell College in Liberty, Missouri, graduating with a bachelor's degree in business administration. Hintz later earned his master's in education in 2013 and began his teaching career. He spent 5 years coaching various sub-varsity roles at his alma mater, working for Sean Hare, and 3 years at Blue Valley North working for Ryan Pfeiffer. In 2016, he got his first opportunity as a head coach at Turner High School in Kansas City, Kansas. Hintz revamped the program's culture at Turner, helping the Golden Bears to their only winning record since 1996. Now in his fifth year at Blue Valley West, Coach Hintz's culture is built around having fun and getting better. The Jaguar Hoops program focuses on positionless skill, basketball IQ, and tough defense. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Sean McDonald, boys varsity basketball coach at University School in Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. You'll want to have your notebook ready as you listen to this episode with Ryan Hintz, boys basketball head coach at Blue Valley West High School in Overland Park, Kansas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Blue Valley West High School in Overland Park, Kansas, our first guest ever from Kansas, Ryan. Ryan Hintz, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about it.
Absolutely.
Ready to get
thrilled,
started.
Thrilled to have you on. Ryan and I met at Snow Valley this summer and got to know each other a little bit there. And I'm definitely looking forward to digging in with you, Ryan, and learning more about your journey. Let's go back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about your first experiences with the game of basketball that you can remember.
Yeah, I actually didn't have a super competitive start to basketball. I think I was, my first team I was on was a co-ed third grade YMCA team. So to say that we were good would be a lie. But I think it was around, you know, just I loved basketball right from the beginning. Loved playing it, loved watching it. I was in the driveway all the time shooting. And so I think, you know, fifth grade started to grow a little bit, gain a little interest. And it probably wasn't until eighth or ninth grade when I started trying to take it seriously and really improve.
What about other sports? Did you play other things growing up?
Yeah, I played everything. I think, you know, luckily my parents wanted me to be well-rounded. So I did, you know, begrudgingly, I did, you know, ballet and I did played the piano and played baseball, soccer, a little bit of football. Got hurt every time I played football, so I tried to stay away from that. By the time I got to high school, I honed in on basketball and really started taking it seriously.
What did it look like when you started taking the game more seriously in terms of you trying to improve and get better? What were some of the things that you were doing, let's say, in a summer in high school? What did that look like for you trying to improve and get your game better?
Well, I mean, I was a driveway kid. I had a hoop in my driveway, and I was out there constantly. I remember a story where we had a neighbor move in, and she couldn't figure out what this noise was. She kept hearing this noise over and over, and it was in the morning, and it was at night, and it was light, and it was dark, and it ended up being my basketball. After a few days, she figured out it was me out in the driveway all the time. So I really got better just one on zero. Then I'd play my little brother in one on one. And a lot of it, you know, once I learned how to pivot, you know, what we call box drills now, I don't really know what it was, but that was essentially what I was doing, was just working on pivoting and shooting and working on that imagination in my driveway. You know, I was playing one on one against Michael Jordan or whoever. So that was really growing up. And then I was lucky enough, I lived less than a mile from my high school. And so our coach, you know, I was a pretty well-behaved kid for the most part. And so I could walk up to the school and bring my own ball and sneak in there and shoot all summer. So a lot of it was individually. Not to say that I didn't have great coaches, but most of the time it was just me and my imagination playing one on zero and working on my game.
Did you have a plan the way a kid today might have a plan? Not necessarily a kid who's working with a trainer, although we know a lot of kids today oftentimes are working with a trainer, but we think about just the amount of information that's out there that kids have access to for putting together workouts and doing different kinds of ball handling routines and shooting drills. Or were you just kind of out there flying by the seat of your pants the way I was back when I was a kid trying to figure out how to get better?
Yeah. I mean, I think I should preface by saying I was not a good player, so no one should do what I did. I think, honestly, I watched the NBA, and I watched the NBA religiously, you know. You know, Hubie Brown, I loved listening to him, and Mike Fratello, and they would explain the game, and, you know, I'd soak all that up. And so I wanted to be Shaquille O'Neal, and I knew I wasn't Shaquille O'Neal, so I tried to be Hakeem Olajuwon, and that was kind of, those were the two guys, and I wasn't Hakeem Olajuwon either, but I focused on footwork and I focused on, you know, how versatile can I be? How can I impact winning? But it was a lot of, you know, footwork, toughness, defense. That was really my game, less than skill so much. It wasn't until, you know, college when, you know, I was allowed to shoot and allowed to dribble and things of that nature. So, I pretty much just winged it, and I was just doing it for fun. You know, there wasn't anything better than shooting hoops.
As a high school player, what's your favorite memory when you look back on your time as a high school basketball player?
You know, a lot of it are the midseason tournament. In Kansas, we really only play in one tournament. Kansas's rules are very outdated, and I don't want to talk too much about it because I'll get in trouble. But we get to play in one tournament in the high school season, and our coach would always take us out of town. So, you know, you take the varsity team and you stay in the hotel and you do the whole thing and you have the meals. And so those are probably my favorite. We played at this place called McPherson, Kansas, and they have this roundhouse, and man, you're playing 8-on-5. The officials are against you when you play at McPherson. So that's a great experience. You know, you always leave upset, but I take my teams down there now to face that adversity because, you know, it makes the kids better. You know, it's like us against the world kind of thing. And that's probably one of my favorite experiences. And then the other one, in my senior year, I finally started, you know, things were clicking. I started getting better. And, you know, that was my first all-tournament team. So that's another nice memory, those mid-season tournaments.
When did college basketball get on your radar where you started thinking that, A, you wanted to play in college, and B, when did it start to become realistic?
Well, I knew I wanted to play in college when I saw the movie He Got Game. I saw that. I saw those recruiting trips, and I thought, oh, man, let's get better at basketball. Realistically, I really wasn't very good. My high school coach, I wanted to play in college. And that was honestly really the only reason I wanted to go to college. Looking back, you know, you're a kid and you think you know everything you need to know. But I was lucky enough that my high school coach's brother was an assistant at William Jewell College. And so I went up there and they showed me around and said, you know, you could start on the JV team. And if you work your way up, and, you know, I knew I did that in high school. I started at the bottom and worked my way till I was a starter. And I had that same vision. If I could just care more than everybody else and work harder than everybody else, then it would work out. So it was really my senior year. I wanted to play. I had zero offers. I just kind of got lucky enough that my high school coach hooked me up.
What was that adjustment like then, going from being a high school player to being a college player? How quickly were you able to adapt? And obviously you said that it took you some time to build your way into your career, but what do you remember maybe about your first experience stepping onto the floor with the returning players?
I think the first thing that I learned was like accountability. And you know, in high school, kids struggle to hold their teammates accountable. And when you're a freshman and you walk into an open gym setting in college, when you mess up, the seniors immediately tell you, you know, that was your fault. And you're just kind of stunned at first, like, whoa, what did I do? You know, that wasn't my fault. And then they explain to you why it was your fault. And so I think just that was one of the biggest things. Obviously, the speed of the game, the skill of everyone. But the thing that stood out to me was how the senior leaders called you out for everything. And not in a bad way, but like, hey, here's our expectations, here's our level. And if you let your guy score, or you don't cover the pick and roll properly, or you don't block out, like, I want to win, so I'm going to tell you about it so that you fix it. And that's something that I remember immediately from the get-go.
Have you learned and shared that lesson with the players that you then coached? And if you have, what does that look like, those conversations or those team meetings when you're having that type of conversation? Because as you said, kids, especially obviously the younger level you go, kids have a hard time holding teammates accountable. That's a difficult conversation for a kid who's 15, 16, 17 years old to have with a peer. So what does that look like when you're coaching, when you're trying to help kids to understand how important that is to hold their teammates accountable?
Yeah, I think two pieces. Like, we talk about our culture constantly, you know, you're either adding value to our culture or you're taking away from our culture. And so with your choices and your actions, you know, there's no staying the same. Just, you know, the old Bo Schembechler's saying, or whatever his name is. But, you know, you're either helping us or hurting us. And so, you know, behaviorally, we talk about that. If you aren't communicating on defense, you're taking away from our culture. And then piece number two would be, you're either helping us win or you're helping us lose. And so I think those are the black and white that I try to paint for the guys to help each other, hold each other accountable. Now, you know, we're high school kids. We struggle with it.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, freshmen can't, you know, they don't hold each other accountable. You know, they want to be buddies. They don't want to be different. They don't want to stand out. But, you know, seniors don't have a tough time holding sophomores accountable. Seniors have a tough time holding seniors accountable. And so I think we frame it in a way like, you know, every choice you make either adds value to our culture or takes away value to our culture. And every decision you make on the basketball court either adds to us winning or adds to us losing. And so when we frame it in that mind, we have had success with seniors saying like, hey, that's going to make us lose. You know, we want to win. We need to block out. We need to communicate, things like that.
I think that makes it pretty black and white. You have a clear, you're either on this side of the line or you're on that side of the line. And a lot of times when you start talking about holding kids accountable or decision-making and those things, it's easy to kind of get yourself lost in those gray areas. And I think you've done a really good job with that of making it black and white. You're either here or you're there. And by framing it that way, I'm sure you help kids to have a better understanding of what it is that you expect from them. And ultimately, that's going to help to make your program and your team more successful. When you think back to your experiences in college, when did coaching get on your radar? While you were still playing, were you thinking about coaching? I know you got a degree in business. I was the same as you, got a degree in business and got done with my playing career. And then I thought, basketball is going to go away. Maybe I better figure out a way to keep basketball in my life. So how did you come to coaching and when did it get on your radar?
Yeah, I think I always wanted to coach. I just wasn't sure I wanted to be a teacher, you know, to get off topic and then I'll get back on topic. You know, once you start taking some education classes, you realize that teaching is coaching and coaching is teaching. But
right.
Before you realize that, it seems like two separate worlds. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, when I told my mom I was going to be a teacher, she laughed at me because I used to get kicked out of class sometimes. And so, so that part, you know, teaching is coaching and coaching is teaching, but I always wanted to coach, in basketball specifically, because I think I wanted to be a great teammate. That was really what I wanted to do. I wanted to help my team get better and win, but I saw the game at a higher level than I think a lot of my peers. And so, I think I was always thinking the game and thinking what could work and how we could manipulate things. And, you know, that kind of led to how I coach, because it seemed like the coach is always talking to the point guard and the coach is always talking to the point guard. And I was this center, defensive center. And I was like, hey man, I got ideas. Like, I feel like this, that, and the other, like, let's get everybody's opinion on these things. And so, I always knew the game really well. And then in Kansas for a while, the high school coach couldn't coach their high school team during the summer. And so my high school coach, when I'd be back from college, he would hire us to coach the high school teams during the summer. So even after my freshman year of college, I was back in the summer, you know, coaching the C team in the summer or whatever. And then as that went on, we'd go to summer camps at Oklahoma State or Oklahoma or St. Louis or wherever, and I'd go with and coach the team. So I think my high school coach could see that you know, I had a knack for it and wanted to do it, and he just kind of put the breadcrumbs out there for me.
All right, so two questions. One, what did you initially like about coaching? What was something that from those first experiences that you really jumped on and you were like, man, I love this piece of coaching? And then after you answer that, I want to jump back to, you mentioned, and it's interesting because obviously states all across the country have different rules, but you mentioned the fact that in Kansas back in the past that coaches weren't able to coach at all. And so my other question would be, where does Kansas stand? So maybe you want to answer that one first, and then we'll get into what you loved about coaching.
I'm going to pick my words wisely. We're on a Kansas Basketball Coaches Association email thread right now that's on like the 500 reply all this week. So it's a hot topic right now. So right now in the summer, we can work with our kids in the month of June, essentially. And, you know, we can do everything you want to do, weights and open gym and play summer league games and tournaments and all that. In July, we kind of kick it over to the AAU teams. And then the frustrating part of Kansas right now is that in the fall and spring, outside of the winter months, I am not allowed to work with my players. And so if I have kids that want to get in the gym, I am not allowed to be in the gym. I'm not allowed to supervise open gym. And so that seems silly to me. You know, if anybody in the high school should be supervising open gym, I would think it would be the basketball coach. But the summer rules have gotten pretty nice. I don't have a lot of complaints about the summer rules. It's the off-season rules that I think, you know, because then a coach or a player has to seek out a personal trainer. You know, and I think AAU is very necessary. I'm not someone that, you know, thinks, you know, you should only listen to a high school coach. Like, we have really good AAU programs around here. And so I think it should be a relationship where the high school program and the AAU program work together for the benefit of the kids. And so, you know, roundabout, I don't know if that answers your question. Our summer rules aren't bad anymore. It's our off-season rules that are frustrating.
What's the logic when coaches raise the objection of, hey, we want to be able to supervise open gym in the fall or the spring, or at least have some contact? What's the pushback from the association? What's the logic behind that?
Well, logic, I don't know. I mean, I want to make a joke that, like, you know, Dr. James Naismith invented this game in Kansas and we haven't changed the rules since. I think we're behind other states, not to get on my soapbox too much, but a lot of it is Kansas City is a populous city, and a lot of the other parts of the state of Kansas are not. And so to have a blanket set of rules for, you know, major cities and then also for 1A small towns, I think it's difficult to have the same rules that cover 1A all the way to 6A. And for the most part, we have the same rules. And so I think that's the biggest flaw, is that 6A, the largest class, doesn't have its own set of rules that make sense for them, that's the best for the kids. And then all the way down, 1A has their own set of rules. I think the logic is that we want to share athletes, and we want kids playing all the sports. And I think that comes from the small towns where, and I could be totally off on this, but in a 1A, 2A school, you need all the boys to play football and basketball and baseball. And so we're going to compartmentalize their calendar so that they have to play football and they have to play basketball and they have to play baseball. Now, that's just my opinion. I don't know if that's, you know, totally accurate, but.
No, that makes sense. I think when you look at it and you say, yeah, you're in a small school, and if there's a bunch of boys that are only playing basketball and now you can't field the football team, I get that. Yep. And to your point, at the same, you know, by the same token, you look at when you're in a more urban area where you have bigger high schools where that isn't an issue. It seems like it's just, I think your quote that shouldn't the basketball coach be the person supervising open gym seems pretty self-explanatory. And yeah, it's so interesting just the way that different high school athletic associations handle both the amount of contact that a coach can have in the summertime and then what the fall rules look like. And, you know, even the state of Ohio, it's been different for a while. We were at 10 days of contact during June where you could coach. Now you could have open gym, but you couldn't actually be coaching. And then we had 10 days in June where you were allowed to coach. Then they went to a couple of years ago, they went to where you could do as much as you wanted over the summer, but you could only do it in the span of like 4-man workouts. So you could be coaching, but you could only do it in a 4-player setting. And then last summer they went to, with COVID, they went to basically unlimited contact. So you could do whatever you want, as much as you wanted.
That was the one thing that COVID helped with.
Yeah. I mean, again, don't get me wrong. There's pluses and minuses to that. I mean, again, I would love as a coach to be able to have access to my players every day. And yet at the same time, I've said this when I've talked to Division I college coaches, that if you're going to hear somebody's voice 12 months out of the year, day after day after day after day, that gets tough too. Like, you need a break. And Ohio does have the month of August is a dead period where there's no coaching allowed. So it does provide for that separation. But I think as a coach, you have to be able to strike a balance. And the fact that if you're in the fall, especially as you're preparing for your season and you can't even see your kids till the first day of tryouts, that to me would be really tough. But it's just interesting how, again, the different associations have different rules. I know back when we first started the podcast, we talked to Scott Rusatz, who coaches in Kentucky, and he's at Covington Catholic, which is right across the river from Cincinnati. And Kentucky at that time had basically unlimited contact. You could do what you wanted, when you wanted, whenever you wanted, as much as you wanted. And then he was competing against schools in Cincinnati, where then Ohio was at that point under that 10-day contact rule. And he would talk about and joke that these coaches from Cincinnati that he was competing against would be so jealous of the amount of time that he got to spend with his players. So again, you could go across the entire country and probably every single state has some kind of different version of the rules. It would be nice if we could make the rules uniform. I know, thinking of just about the shot clock and all these different things that seemingly make complete sense to improve the game, and yet everybody kind of has their own little way of doing things. And it would just be nice if we could kind of get a uniform set of rules that everybody could operate under and that were designed to maximize the benefit to the game, to the players, to the coaches. And I guess you could still always argue that, but it's just interesting that there's so much difference across the country.
Well, and I mean, we met at Snow Valley. We have the means to do that with USA Basketball. I mean,
for sure,
you know, Greg White talks about it all the time. You know, if we made USA Basketball run basketball, we could have the same rules. And, you know, we suffer from that too. The Missouri state line is super close to where we are. You know, I actually live in Missouri. And so, you know, they start 3 weeks earlier than us. They play five more games than us. They get 3 hours, I think, I could be wrong, but I think it's 3 hours of contact time with their kids in the off season that aren't doing, you know, an in-season sport. And so, you know, they're running through shell drill and, you know, getting shots up and, you know, whatever. But we go and we schedule. A couple of years ago, I had a good team and I was like, let's play, you know, the best teams around. And so we scheduled a Missouri team that I knew was going to be good. And it was our first game and it was their fifth game, and it didn't go very well. So I think just the competing across the state lines, and when you see the other state doing it better for the kids, you know, it makes you jealous, but really you're thinking about the kids. You know, a college coach calls me and says, hey, can I come see your player at open gym? And you're like, well, actually, I'm not allowed to organize open gym, facilitate open gym, or be at open gym. And so, no, you can't come see my kid. You know, like, how is that helping a kid get recruited? And so that's where, you know, I don't really care how much contact time I have, but I became a basketball coach to open the gym for the kids that want to come in at 6 a.m. You know, the kids that have the dream, that want to put the time in, I want to help those kids. And to have a state association tell me that I can't do that when you hired me, I'm absolutely a teacher, absolutely, but you hired me to be the basketball coach. When the kids are in the gym, I should be in there. That's just common sense.
Yeah, I don't see how you could make an argument against that particular statement in any way, shape, or form. How many games do you guys play regular season in Kansas?
We get to play 20.
So Ohio was at 20 for a long, long time. And they recently, within the last couple of years, I can't remember exactly when they expanded it out to, we're at 22 right now. But I know there are some states that play at 32, at least 35. Yeah. I see
Missouri
some of the records.
I'm 25. Like, okay. And then, yeah, we're working right now with our 6A coaches, the biggest class, to try to push for some rule changes. We've collected data for partial data the first year, but complete data the last 2 years, with all the 6A coaches, you know, trying to push these rule changes. A shot clock. We're trying to add 3 more games. The big leagues around here are big enough that in 20 games, if you play every team, you know, you don't have any non-conference games. And so you have to choose between a midseason tournament and a preseason tournament. And then, you know, the the power districts, you know, there's five Blue Valleys and five Olathes and five Shawnee Missions right here in the area. We can't play each other because the other league has so many teams in it that they don't have any games left. And so these great matchups, like I can't play Shawnee Mission East and my own high school coach, except for in a tournament. That's the only time we get to play because they don't have any non-conference games. And so, like, stuff like that, adding three games isn't a big deal. You know, adding a shot clock is a big deal, but if you ask any basketball coach, you know, they're going to tell you that that time has come. We need a shot clock in high school basketball. It's silly that we don't have it.
I couldn't agree more with that. I think I was just reading a thread on Twitter. I think Brian McCormick, who was a guest here, was talking about people arguing about, you know, arguing against the shot clock. And he's over in Europe right now. He said, I'm watching 13-year-olds play with a 24-second shot clock, and we're arguing that high school kids can't handle a 30-second shot clock or a 45-second shot clock or whatever it is that different states are considering putting in. And I just think the argument against the shot clock, I think in a lot of cases it just comes down to, that's one more person we have to pay. That's $2,000 more worth of equipment that we have to purchase. And I think it's silly, but I think that's an argument that still is being raised in a lot of places to keep the shot clock from being instituted in various states. I think we'll get there eventually. I don't know how soon, but it seems like there's a lot of momentum and coaches are getting a little bit more vocal about it. And so hopefully that'll eventually take place. It'll be a change for the better for our game. I think you've made the point several times that you get into coaching to help the kids and to help them to get better and to improve the game. And I think the things that we've just been talking about are things that are going to make the game better for everybody that's involved in the long run. And really that's what it's all about.
I think the money thing is a little bit of a cop out. I understand it, but you know, COVID hit and all of a sudden NFHS gave us a free camera to stream our games.
Exactly. You
know? And exactly. It's like, oh, well, Huddle charged me $3,000 for that camera the year before, but now I get it for free if I switch over to NFHS. And, you know, all that was a need. Well, we have a need for a shot clock. So NFHS, let's come up with a shot clock program and let's get them instituted and let's make sure, you know, like incentivize it as you need to. I don't know. Like problem solved. Here's the problem. Let's fix it.
Listen, I'm just going to throw this out there, Mike and Ryan. Listen, if this was a football problem, I bet you it would be taken care of. And I was just going to leave it at that because I think that I know they're totally two totally different sports, but I think if this was a football problem and they needed a shot clock or say they put a play clock in football for high school football, because they don't have a play clock, right? Am I wrong in that statement, Ryan? I don't know if you know, but
we have one. Yeah, we have one.
Oh, okay. I think Ohio has one. I could be wrong, but your point is well taken, Jay. Your point is well taken. I think.
Well, in South Dakota, my family's from South Dakota, and you know, South Dakota has a shot clock, and you know, you go to the gym, and I'm like, okay, I'm in a town that doesn't even have a stoplight and they have a shot clock and zero disrespect to this town in South Dakota. And I look and it says, this shot clock's brought to you by insert the town bank. You know, it's like, it's that easy. Like
it's not that hard.
Take two competing banks and you say, who wants it? And we'll put a sign up and your shot clock's paid for it. Like it's just a lack of doing what's right.
I agree with you. I think Jason makes a good point about football kind of being the driver. I always look at least here in the state of Ohio, I think football drives conference realignment. You see all these different things that are all based around football, and it's kind of amazing. And I guess football is probably the most well-attended high school sport in most places, I would guess. It gets more attendance than basketball, but you factor in the amount of equipment that you have to spend and get transportation for the number of kids that you have and all these things. I just, in a lot of ways, I don't understand why football is always the driver, but I think Jason's right that if it was a football problem, it would probably get solved a lot faster. So at any rate, hopefully at some point we are looking at a shot clock across the United States in every state. When that is, I don't know, but I think we're trending in that direction. So whether it's 2 years from now, whether it's 5 years from now, whether it's 10 years from now, I think eventually we'll get there, and hopefully you'll still be coaching and we'll still be podcasting at that point. So we can celebrate. So we can celebrate the fact that we have a shot clock across the country. All right, let's go back to you, your coaching career and the start of it. What was something right away when you were coaching those high school teams back at your school for your high school coach? What's something that you loved about coaching right away that you took to and you were like, man, I love this piece of it?
Two things come to mind. Number one, I had knowledge that they didn't. And I think just passing on that knowledge and you know, saying, hey, did you ever think about this or that? You know, when a team does this, we want to do this. And so just like, you know, paying it forward almost and passing that knowledge down. And then I think something that I think it was just because coming from my alma mater or working at my alma mater, like I knew what my head coach expected. And so I had some ground to stand on with the kids of like, do you guys want to end up playing varsity? Yeah. Okay. Well, here's what coach is going to need from me. He's going to need this, that. And so like, I don't care if we're the C team, like we're going to hold ourselves. Y'all want to make varsity. So I'm going to treat you like you need to be a varsity player. And I think just, I don't know if that would have happened if I didn't start, you know, my freshman year at the summer of college working at my high school for my high school coach. I think that was a piece of it. But I really loved just sharing the knowledge that I had that they didn't know. And then, you know, trying to give back to my high school program and make sure, you know, that the guys coming up were tough enough and smart enough and good enough to keep our tradition going.
How did that relationship with your high school coach change when you went from player to former player, alumni to coaching within the program? Was there a change in the relationship or just how was it easy, hard to transition into that? What was that like?
Yeah, that's interesting. Kind of brings a smile to my face. Sean Harris, my high school coach, he's a Shine Missionese and he's a father figure to me. And to this day, he does a lot for me. So I think when I first became, like, I was the freshman A coach on his staff when I got done with college, it was kind of weird. You know, you're walking that fine line and I'm just out of college. So I'm doing just out of college stuff with my life. And so it was still kind of like that, you know, coach player relationship. And I think each year it got a little more, not necessarily peer, because, you know, he's your high school coach is always your coach and there's that respect there. But by the time I got some head coaching jobs, you know, his first name would slip out of my mouth instead of calling him coach there. So I think it got smoother and smoother as the years went on. But there was always a high level of respect. And I think, you know, so many of us coach, and it sounds like a cliche, but then when you think about it, like a lot of the lessons you learn in life, I learned through basketball. And because I learned them through basketball, a lot of the lessons I learned in life, I learned through him. And so I think it's just like I have the utmost respect for him, and he got me started, and he's gotten me, you know, other opportunities. And so, you know, again, that's just kind of, I always want to be there for my kids when they graduate and when they come back, and whether it's, you know, a coaching job or a recommendation letter or an interview or whatever, I want to, you know, just kind of pay it forward.
What's something that you took from him that you still reference back to or utilize or use in your coaching today?
I think one of the things that sounds weird is like, you have to have a little crazy to you. Like you can't just, you know, if you show up without enthusiasm or without intensity, or you are ill prepared, you know, your team notices that. And I think he did a great job of every single day being demanding and being intense. And when he walked in the gym, you stood up straight. And when he walked in the gym, you made sure you were paying attention, you were listening. And so I think just that you got to have a little bit of crazy if you're going to keep high school kids' attention all the time and get them to, you know, get them to push themselves harder than they think they're able to push themselves. So I think there's that piece. I've been really lucky. All my coaches that I've played for and worked with or for, they've all been extremely hard workers. And so from the beginning, I don't think Coach Hare ever told me no. Like if I wanted to, you know, can I come up and shoot? I don't think he ever told me no. So I think that's just something like, again, my job is if somebody wants to play college basketball at Blue Valley West, my job is to help them make that dream come true. And, you know, I think he was the difference in me playing college basketball.
Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more. Obviously, there are things that coaches do on the floor to be able to help their players to achieve their dream of playing college basketball. But when you think about some of the things that you can do as a head coach to help your players off the floor in terms of communicating with college coaches, in terms of making yourself accessible, making their film accessible, just maybe describe for people who are listening, what are some of the things that you as a head high school basketball coach can do to be able to help your players get an opportunity at the next level?
I think first and foremost, it can't be about you. It's got to be about the kid. And then I think the next step is, you know, sitting down with the parents as well and having an honest discussion about, you know, realistic dreams and, you know, what levels you see. And so I think just kind of everybody getting on the same page that we're all working towards the same goal would be the first step. I do think as a coach, you know, you need to be out there and attending clinics and being a part of associations and trying to cultivate, you know, working camps in the summer and try to cultivate those relationships because, you know, I've witnessed at Snow Valley where a kid goes up there with no offers and leaves with an offer, you know, with, you know, one of the D3 coaches that's up there. And so those relationships, I think, the professional relationships that the coaches cultivate are extremely important. And then my big thing with my guys is just I'm brutally honest. I lost that a little bit when I became a head coach for the first time. You know, you want everybody to like you a little bit, and you don't want your best players to quit and stuff like that. But I think one of the things that has got me back after the first couple of years is I'm brutally honest whether you like it or not, and I think players like that.
That's one of, I think, the hardest things to do as a young coach who's still trying to establish themselves as a head coach and trying to build a successful program. I know that I've been around situations where you had a longtime coach who could, I don't get away with is the wrong way to say it, but could be brutally honest with players. And then that coach leaves, a new coach comes in and suddenly tries to do the exact same thing that the previous coach easily was able to do. And suddenly that coach isn't able to do it in the same way. And I think you made a great point that, especially with the way that players at the high school level, AAU, we see it in the college transfer portal, if things aren't going the way that a player or a player's family wants them to go, the number of kids that will just instantaneously pack up and leave and go to another school or go and play for another program, we all know that that's a big, I don't want to know necessarily no problem, but it's definitely an issue that coaches talk about all the time. And I think that the most successful coaches are the ones who are able to get past that and are able, as you said, to be able to be brutally honest so that they're telling their players what they need to hear. So often kids, just people tell them what they want to hear instead of what they need to hear. And again, if you're a kid that, and you're a player that wants to get better, you want somebody to tell you, what are the holes in my game? How can I improve? What do I need to do better? Because ultimately I want to have the kind of success that's going to be required from me to put my best out there. And if I'm not hearing constructive criticism from my coaches, then how am I ever going to be able to put my best out there on the floor? But you make a great point that that's not easy to do. It's very difficult. Is there anything else that you can think of that when you first got your head coaching job that you've improved a lot upon since you first started?
Well, before I get to that, if you can ask me that in a minute, I was thinking about, John Gordon saying love tough, and instead of tough love,
right?
You know, the love comes first. And I think that was my biggest thing that I took from, when I took over this job, and, we didn't have enough talent to win, but I had some young kids, and the young kids had some habits that maybe I didn't love, and, you know, I don't want to lose them, and how do I hold them accountable? And, you know, I just ended up being too nice. And really, being too nice was actually just being dishonest, letting them get away with stuff that isn't going to help them in the future. And so I think the way that I corrected that was, you know, really investing in the relationship with the players. And there's no quick way to, that takes time. And so the more years I was here and the earlier I met the kids and all of that, I think it's easier. They know that I love them. And so then that love is first, and then you can be tough with them. And by tough, I mean honest. And so I was just thinking about that while that was kind of where I wanted to go with that.
All right. Well, let me follow that up with, when you're building those kinds of relationships with your players, what does that look like? What are some things that you do to facilitate the type of relationships that you're talking about that allow you then to have those honest conversations?
Well, I think, you know, relationship one-on-one, like, you know, learn their names as soon as possible. I kind of have a little, you know, you run camps, Mike, everybody has a little camp trick, and, you know, I'll know every kid's name before the end of day one, no, whether there's, you know, 50, 60, 70 kids in the gym, like that's what I go, you know, learn their names first and then use their names every time you see them. So, you know, we have youth camp or youth practice, and I'm holding the door when they walk in, and I use their name and give them a high five and tell them hello. And, you know, every single time. And so, you know, we've got fifth graders here. And so every time they walk in the gym, the head coach, you know, knows their name, gives them a high five. And so I think that's an easy one. And then with the high school kids, you know, it's just points of contact throughout the day. And that takes effort, you know, printing off the kids' schedules and kind of, you know, okay, if I take 5 minutes during, you know, my break here and I walk the first floor, I can hit this kid, this kid, this kid, and just, you know, just a point of contact. How's your day going? You know, just kind of keep track. Are they playing football? How's the football game? Are they, you know, working on baseball? How's your swing going? How's your workouts? And so you just kind of, I mean, it takes effort. I think it was Forbes at Wake Forest now, but he had a flow chart where, you know, Mondays he talked to these kids and Tuesdays he talked to these kids. I thought that was an awesome idea to keep everything straight. And I tried to start doing that with my alumni. Is like, okay, on Mondays, I'm going to talk to, you know, the graduating class of 19. And on Tuesdays, I'm going to try to send some texts to the 20s. And, you know, just to, you know, relationships take work. And so, like anything, you know, we have a plan for how we're going to break a press, but, you know, have a plan for how you're going to touch base with all 55 kids in your program. Or, you know, if you're, you know, you can hit 12 varsity kids every day. And you're not perfect, but you make a plan for it.
I think that putting together a plan is totally underrated, because I can think about myself, people that I know, and we all have great intentions about staying in touch with person X or person Y, or getting this done or getting that done. And me personally, I find that when I do put those things into a spreadsheet, or when I write them down on a to-do list, I'm much more intentional about actually getting to them. If I just leave it floating out there nebulously, I almost always end up pushing that off to the next day, or, and then before you know it, it's been a week, and then it's been a month, and then it's been a year. And now you've kind of lost the opportunity to build those kinds of relationships that you're talking about. And I think if you could set up a system where you do have a list of, hey, I'm going to do this on Monday, or I'm going to do this in week one of the month, and I'm going to do this in week two of the month, or even if you just did it monthly, you'd be way ahead of the game of where most people and probably most coaches are in terms of reaching out to people who are your alumni. And obviously, if you're a teacher in the building, it's a little bit easier to go and have contact with your players every day throughout the school day. We know that across the country, there's a lot of coaches that don't coach in the building where they, you know, they don't teach in the building where they coach. And that makes it a little bit tougher and a little bit more of a challenge. But certainly if you're a teacher, you can make it a point to, as you said, find the kid's schedule, get and see them in the hallway, or touch base with them in class, or just ask them questions about how other sports are going or how their classes are going. That's huge. And then from a youth standpoint, I want to dive into youth basketball with you here in a second, but you made the point of talking about getting to know every kid's name. And that's one of the things that I would say I've prided myself on probably more than anything when it comes to the camps that I run, is getting a chance to know every single kid's name. And just like you, I make a really concentrated effort that at the end of day one, I know every single kid's name. And obviously that helps you, A, to build a relationship with the kid. It also helps you to control the situation in a camp, where if a kid's doing something they're not supposed to, you can call them out. And conversely, if a kid's doing something that they are supposed to, or doing something outstanding, and you can call them by name, there's nothing better than that. And then the other thing that I think is probably underrated, especially when it comes to being a high school coach, is the goodwill that you engender with a parent when you know their kid's name. It's, to me, that's invaluable. As a basketball camp business owner, when the kid comes in on the second day and I've got 90 kids at my camp, and the kid walks in the door and I can say, "Hey, Billy, how you doing?" And he's with his mom, and mom's like, "Well, you know, oh my God, this guy knows my kid, and he's here with 90 other kids." To me, that goes such a long way. And I know it's not easy for everybody to remember names, but people always ask me, "What's your trick?" And I always tell them, I don't really have a trick. I just ask them their name. I look at their face. And then you made the greatest point of all, is you just keep saying their name over and over again every time you interact with them. And by doing that, if it means something to you, then you end up learning their names. And I think it makes a big, big impact on what you're trying to do. Youth basketball, and especially developing a youth feeder program, to me is one of the critical points. If you want to have a successful high school program, now obviously you can have a successful team without having a successful youth program, because you can just get lucky and get some talent that coalesces in one particular year. But if you want to have a program, you have to develop your youth program. So tell us a little bit about your philosophy and what you guys do there at Blue Valley West to build your youth program and get kids excited about eventually being part of your varsity team.
That last part is really what it is. You know, I think basketball, sports in general, but for me, it's basketball. Basketball brings the community together. And, you know, since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a Lancer. And I knew the varsity kids when I was in fifth grade. I knew their names, and they were, you know, gods to me. And in eighth grade, even more. And, you know, so that's what I wanted to build. You know, I want the kids to have a Blue Valley West basketball that, you know, they leave out in the rain, and then next year they get another one. You know, like, I want them, if they go to our feeder schools, to want to be Jaguars. And so I think one of the best things that I did was explain that to the varsity team when I got here. And, you know, taught them what is a legacy, and how does that work. And, you know, yeah, we want to leave something better than we found it, but we also want to pass something on to the next generation. And I think when I I just honestly pleaded with them. You know, the first set of seniors, I was like, guys, if you could do anything for me, get these little kids excited about being Jaguars, because we aren't going to be very good this year. And the seniors knew it. You know, they hadn't won very much when I got there. But I was like, we're going to be good, because I'm going to put the work in. Now, I need you guys to help me. And I think the seniors, you know, they'd high-five the kids. You know, we've got this awesome thing where we call it JYDP Nation. So the youth program is JYDP, Jaguar Youth Development Program. And we block off the first three rows behind the varsity bench, and that's JYDP Nation, and only little kids can sit there. And so when our kids sub out of the game, you know, in our culture, everyone on the bench stands and high-fives the guy coming out, coaches too, without exception. Well, you know, you high-five everybody on your team, and then you go get the little kids, and you high-five the little kids. And, I mean, I think getting your high school kids, not necessarily, you know, I don't need them at practice. I don't need them to do, you know, I don't need them volunteering their time. I just need them to invest in those little kids. We have times where, you know, during the season, the practices overlap. We've got, you know, high school practice is just ending and youth is coming in after. We'll bring the youth kids down and, you know, play one-on-one, you know, high school kid rebound for the little kid, or little kid rebound for the high school kid. And I think those, it's less me doing it and it's more like the kid. Like, I want to be senior X when I get older. Well, guess what? You just met senior X, and that makes a huge difference.
It does. I think that aspirational piece is so underrated when it comes to developing a love for the game, because I go back to when I was a kid and times were different then, but the guys who coached my teams when I was in fourth, fifth, sixth grade, there was no travel basketball. There was no AAU basketball back at that time. You just played in your local rec league. And the coaches in my local rec league were the high school players. So I still remember every coach that I had. I still am in contact with one or two of those coaches that I had back when I was in fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And then when I got to high school, I had an opportunity to coach some of the younger kids that were coming up behind me. And to me, there's nothing more valuable than just building that link between the high school varsity and the kids that are coming up behind them. Because I remember sitting in the stands, just like you talked about wanting to be a Lancer. And I remember sitting in the stands and watching the high school players come out and in their layup line slapping the backboard. And I just, man, I thought that was the greatest thing that I had ever seen was, man, they get to come out and they get to slap the backboard. I was like, I remember being in fourth, fifth, sixth grade thinking, man, someday I'm going to get to go out there and smack that backboard. And in a lot of places, unfortunately, because the game has shifted away from that, there are still some communities and there are still some coaches that we've talked to that have their kids involved in the program the way you do or the way I remember. But in a lot of places, the high school program has been disassociated with the local recreation community. Obviously, basketball has shifted to a lot of kids that may have in the past started out playing rec basketball already in second or third grade. They're already into the AAU system and that kind of thing. But I do think that the really good high school programs make a concerted effort to connect the varsity team to the youth program. And when you do that, I think you're just setting yourself up for long-term success.
Well, when you go ahead. Well, it's got to be intentional too. I mean, you know, again, a plan. You know, a lot of what we do in the program in the high school, we do the exact same thing with the youth kids. And you know, we don't play in our youth. We practice each grade level practices 90 minutes twice a week. We never play 5-on-5 in practice, never. You know, and our program mantra is have fun and get better. You know, every time you show up and you're at Blue Valley West playing basketball, you have two jobs, and that's to have fun and get better. And they're in that order on purpose because, you know, I didn't sit in the driveway for hours on end to get better. I did it because it was fun, you know.
Exactly.
I was having fun. And all the times I used to have to remind myself in college when we're, you know, having one of those practices, and anybody that played in college has had one of those practices. And I used to have, like, remember how much fun basketball is, remember how much fun basketball is. And to me, I always relied on, you know, basketball is fun. And I think whether you're good at it or bad at it or great at it, it's still fun. You know, that's why in rec basketball, there's still 100 kids that get cut that still sign up for basketball because it's a lot of fun. I don't see 100 kids signing up for rec football, you know? And so I think the having fun piece, we intentionally put that first. And then I think a lot of the program stuff is the same. And so I can say, you know, hey, well, the varsity goal, if you want to be a varsity player, here's the goal. Right now, you guys are in fifth grade, so we're going to start the goal right here. But if you really want to get better, you're going to be in your driveway, and you're going to be seeing if, you know, if you can get your goal from 5 to 10, you know, and then seventh grade goal is this. And if you're already at 10, then you're going to be ahead of the game. And so it's just kind of like, again, I just assume every kid that comes to my gym wants to be that varsity starter that he sees on Friday night or Tuesday night. And I think there's an intentionality piece that, that you have to have if you're going to integrate your youth program with your high school program.
You're obviously very hands-on with the youth program, but I know you have coaches that help you out and work with the kids as well. So how do you make sure that you convey your philosophy to them so that they understand what it is that you want the program to look like, and so that they can coach the kids in the way that you want them to be coached in terms of, hey, let's have fun, let's get better. What does that look like? So how do you work with your coaches to make sure that they are adhering to your philosophy that you want to have for the youth program?
Well, I think I want to start with saying I'm super lucky with the people that I've found. I've got a great coaching staff. I don't allow the high school coaches to be on the youth staff, and I don't allow the youth staff to be on the high school staff because, A, the Kansas rules are such, and then B, you know, that they're different entities. They are the same thing, but they're different entities. And so I think with the youth program, we start in October. Our basketball season starts mid-November for high school. And so if we start in October, that gives me 6 weeks to be at every practice, to lay the groundwork, to, you know, teach the culture, essentially. And, you know, I trust these guys. The nice thing is we've had the same coaches the whole time. I think one mistake that coaches make when they have a youth program is they don't pay their guys enough. You know, I would much rather overpay good coaches and not have to go find new coaches than make more money myself, you know? And so I think, you know, that's something I learned from Coach Hare as well. You know, you treat people like family, and you're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna short your family $5 an hour. You're gonna pay them $5 more an hour than what they expect,
right,
you know?
Right.
And I think with just that mindset of, like, you know, this is yours too. You know, this program, it's not my program, it's our program. And we, as a youth program, invest in kids to make the high school program better. And, you know, when the high school program has a great season, that's because you guys invested in these kids when they were fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth graders and, you know, had fun and got better. So I think I got lucky with the great coaches that I have. And then I think I was purposeful in, you know, trying to make sure that they don't feel like employees, but rather they have some ownership and some stake in this.
Going along with that, how do you put together your staff at the high school level? What's your process for, A, finding the right people, and then what specific characteristics are you looking for in somebody who's going to be a part of your high school staff?
I'm going to be honest. It's getting harder and harder, I think. I think the amount of time commitment to the pay ratio is very off, and I don't think people quite understand You know, like, hey, I want to coach basketball. And then the time commitment that that takes away from your family. You know, you really sacrifice your time with your family during basketball season for a very insignificant amount of money as an assistant high school coach. And so kind of takes a special person. I would rather have someone that played in college than someone that hasn't. I think high school kids, immediately, if you can still play, or, you know, you can beat a kid in a shooting contest, you know, they listen to you more than if you can't. So that's one thing. I think just, like, how do you see the game? I am not an elite coach. I don't like that word. I think it gets thrown around. You know, you see seventh graders with elite on their jerseys. You're like, you're not elite at all. And so I'm more about development. And so, you know, you ask questions in interviews to see if, you know, is the ego going to come out, or is it really about the kids? And, you know, how would you feel, if, you know, you had players that weren't very good? You know, how would that impact your coaching? And so you just kind of ask pointed questions that get to the bottom of, like, why they do it. And, you know, every coach wants to have a good team, and every coach wants to have good players. But, you know, the freshman B team isn't always great. You know, the sophomore team doesn't always go 20-0. So I think it's important to have people that want to do it for the right reasons. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. I think it's interesting when you try to figure out how to put together a staff, and you made a great point about the time commitment that it takes to coach at every level. I think it's crept into the college game. I think it's definitely crept into the high school game. If you were to go back 20 or 30 years ago and think about the amount of time that the average high school coach was putting in, and I've said this on the podcast numerous times, I think the baseline level of the amount of time that you have to put in as a high school coach has grown exponentially. And that's even to just be average. And if you're talking about you want to go above and beyond, you said it really well that during the basketball season, and depending upon what state you're in outside the basketball season, there's just a tremendous amount of time and commitment that it takes in order for you to build a successful program. How have you been able to balance your desire to be a great basketball coach and put the time in your program, and yet still maintain balance in your life? What have you gone about? How have you gone about approaching that?
Mike, I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm not the person to answer that question. I do not have great insight on that. You know, I'm here till 9:30 at night most nights. It is something that I think, you know, having mentors, I have a coach on my staff, Don Cameron, and he's in multiple Hall of Fames, and I'm lucky enough to have him as my JV coach, and he mentors me, and, you know, he brought up that you do have to have balance, and, you know, I'm lucky enough to have somebody at home that is putting up with my schedule, and, you know, I'm really not the person. I don't have great secrets on that. I think I could definitely improve on my work-life balance because, again, when I'm in the gym, I'm living the dream.
I think a lot of coaches, Ryan, honestly feel that way. And it's that passion for the game of basketball that brought us all to the game, first as players, most likely, and then as coaches. And it's difficult because we care so much about the game. We care so much about our players. We're so invested in that success that I think it's easy to maybe overlook some of the things that we have at home. And you have to have, if you're married, you obviously have to have a supportive spouse who understands sort of your sickness and be able to understand it. And when you don't, I think, you know, you see the large number of coaches that end up unfortunately getting divorced because they do spend just an inordinate amount of time with their teams and with the game of basketball. And it's something that I think coaches are probably struggling with more now than ever because of, as I said, that amount of time that it takes in order to be successful. And yet we love the game of basketball. And really that's, I think, what it comes down to is trying to figure out how do I balance that love of the game and my desire to be successful and to pour into the kids that I have versus, again, whether it's my family, wife, kids, husband, whatever it might be. It's a challenge, and it's a challenge that coaches are facing at all levels of the game. It's something that's out there. It really is.
I try to think of it like, you know, when I am doing a good job or when I catch myself going, you know, too far workaholic mode, you know, think back to, you know, what type of teammate are you being at home, you know, and your household as a team. And, you know, I think it's easier to be a workaholic and just pour into, and it's harder and it takes more discipline to have balance in your life. And so, you know, when I do a good job of it or I'm working at it, then I'm just kind of challenge myself to be a better teammate or, you know, kind of framing it like, hey, if you stay and work, you know, this stuff will be here tomorrow. Like, you don't really have to do this stuff. Your to-do list is done. You're taking the easy way out and you're being a little selfish. And why don't you go home and do something nice? And so, you know, luckily, my girlfriend Leslie is putting up with me. But to say that I have any insight to pass on to other coaches, she would tell you I do not.
I think, though, the same thing that you mentioned earlier about staying in contact with your own players, your alumni, being intentional about it. And I think if you think about it and you stop, as you said, and you kind of take a deep breath, and you think, hey, am I being a good teammate both at home and with my staff? I think that if you sort of build that in, that I need to stop every once in a while and take a breath, and obviously during the season, that's really hard to do. But I think if you do that, you at least have a better chance of understanding where you are and then trying to make it work. And again, we're all far from perfect, but it's always interesting to hear people's different responses and answers to that question, because I don't think anybody has the magic wand that just makes it all better. I think that we all go through times where we're spending way more time with our teams versus way more time at home. And you just have to figure out what balance works for you and your particular situation.
It's the extra stuff that gets me in trouble, because, you know, we'll have youth practice, you know, Monday, Wednesday nights. And last night I went to the you know, senior night soccer game because, you know, one of our guards is a senior soccer player. And,
right,
you know, the Friday night before I went to the senior football game because, you know, the quarterback and the wide receiver are on our team. It's the extra stuff that, like, goes a super long way with, you know, with building those relationships and getting the buy-in from the kids. But, you know, at what cost does it take away from any amount of, like, free time that, you know, like, I do the for chain sure. gang for the football team because, you know, I love the front row and I always know how the football team's going and I like being a part of it. And one thing about chain gang is you get to watch the other coaches. And so you kind of get to, you get to see how different coaching staffs work together or not. Yeah. But you know, those Friday nights outside of the high school season are pretty precious to your significant other. And, you know, when you give those up to work the chain gang, sometimes it gets you in the doghouse a little bit.
Completely understand. All right, let's jump away from that and talk a little bit about basketball philosophy. When do you feel like you had a handle on who you were as a coach? And I know that it's always evolving, it's always adapting, you're always growing, trying to get better. But was there a point where you kind of felt like, okay, in an ideal situation, this is sort of what I believe offensively, defensively? When did you come to that realization, if you have?
Yeah, I don't think I'm there, to be honest. You know, I like trying different offenses because I haven't found, like, the, you know, I always think, you know, Jim Boone, you know, has his pack line, and I know he didn't invent it, but it's his baby and he
loves
it.
Right, it's his thing. Right.
And I've always felt like, you know, at some point I'm going to get this offense that's like my baby, and that's what we'll do the rest of eternity. And so, you know, selfishly and also probably not good for our record, I've tried different offenses a lot. just to learn it and coach it. And I know you're only supposed to, you know, coach things that you know, frontwards and backwards. But I also think with the way the game's evolving, like I want to be creative, and I want to know all the things. And so offensively, I'm definitely still soaking up knowledge and trying different things, and for better and for worse, you know, sometimes, you know, I feel like if we just would have ran the flex for five straight years, we might have won more games, but I don't know if I would be as good of a coach, because I think all that learning and trying new things, you know, it's like compound interest. You know, you take a little bit of this and you take a little bit of that, and 4 years of this and 2 years of that, and it builds on itself. And now my knowledge base, selfishly, is wider than it would have been if I would have just, you know, ran the offense that my college ran, you know? So, and then defensively, like, I believe that defense is defense. Whether you're in man or zone, you know, 1-3-1, amoeba, matchup, you know, switch everything, like, your defensive principles should cover all the situations on defense. And so, you know, I've had complicated defenses where we change all the time. I've had teams where we've ran man almost exclusively. But I think defense is defense, and a lot of defense is an effort and attitude. And obviously there's, you know, there's skill to it, but so much of it is just getting five guys to believe that they're better together than one guy individually. And so I feel really good about my defensive philosophy. And then I take great pride in our positionless basketball as far as skill sets go. And offensively, I really like this conceptual offense that I'm learning about. And so that's kind of where I'm trending right now. But, you know, I feel like I've tried a lot of different things. And then the fun part is when I think that I found something new, my assistant coach is like, yeah, that's not new. So-and-so ran that in 1994. I went to a clinic on that back in the day. So I don't know. I think I'm set on my skill development. I'm set on my defense. And then offense, I haven't found that magical pack line offense.
And I think the game is always evolving. So you may have a philosophy that, hey, back in 1985, you may have been Bob Knight running the motion offense, and now nobody's running the motion offense in the same way that it was run by Bob Knight and the Indiana Hoosiers in the 1980s. So the game is always evolving, and as a coach, you're always learning and growing and trying to improve and get better. I want to wrap up here, Ryan, with one final question, two-parter. I've asked it to a lot of our coaches at the end of episodes, but the question is, number one, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what's your biggest challenge? And then number two, when you wake up every morning and you get out of bed and you think about what you get an opportunity to do at Blue Valley West, what's your biggest joy? So your biggest challenge followed by your biggest joy.
Challenge, I think, you know, this is my fifth year here. And so these seniors were eighth graders when I got here. And like I said, I really invested in the youth program. And, you know, Coach Showalter tweeted something out that I put a sticky note on my computer and I read it every day. And it's, you know, achieving the last 10% of your goal is always the hardest part. And so that's kind of where my mind is. Like, I don't really know what that means yet. But I have it in my mind that, you know, we're really close and we've invested a lot, and the kids have built a program that we can all be proud of. And so this last 10% is going to be the hardest part. And I don't really know what that means, but that's kind of where, you know, when you ask me what my challenge is right now, I think just figuring out that last 10% and keeping everybody, you know, rowing the boat in the same direction. And then what was the next one? The joy?
Yep. Greatest joy.
I think, you know, there's plenty of times through all this, you know, I'm so sick of wearing a mask every day that, you know, it's so much easier to choose the negative. And I think my greatest joy right now is that I get to model what it's like to choose to be positive. And every day in my classes, I get to model what it's like. Like, I can just choose to have energy. I can choose to give great effort. I can choose to have a positive attitude. And I think, you know, at this point in my life, I think my greatest joy is just that I feel like I'm having an impact on the future of our society.
That's a great answer. And I think that I've said it a few times that getting an opportunity to have an impact on the world, on kids, through something that you love, that I love, that Jason loves, through the game of basketball, to me, there's nothing more special than that. And I think that what you just said sums that up better than any way that I've ever said it. Before we wrap up, Ryan, I want to give you a chance to share how people can get in touch with you. You want to share social media, website, email, whatever you feel comfortable sharing. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah. I'm not very good at social media, but I'm on there. My Twitter is at Coach Hints, but just one H. So COACHINTZ. And then my email is Coach REHINTZ, REHINTZ at Gmail. And, you know, love to talk hoops, love to connect, would happily share, you know, youth program ideas.
Ryan, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. It was a lot of fun having this conversation, getting to know a little bit more about you, how you built your program, and just things that you've been able to learn about the game over the course of your career. So thank you. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.